We're going to be covering a very interesting topic this morning, and that is the topic which has been the topic of Sukkos. Because if you've been noticing, the Haftorah for day number one and for Shabbos Chol HaMoed, which was essentially day one and day three for us, was the topic of Gog or Magog in different permutations. And it pays to get a sense of understanding of what its connection to Sukkos is, what is actually going on, and perhaps what is the war of Gog or Magog, this apocalyptic battle which is described. So, being as Haftorah time in Shul is not always the most attentive era or section of our davening, I want to just go through one or two of the points of the two versions of this apocalypse, of the war of Gog or Magog, very briefly, just so we get a sense of the actual occurrences. Notice the differences between Ezekiel and Zechariah, and then we can come back and analyze a few of the details. So just very briefly, we're not going to go through all of it, but just at least the beginning of Ezekiel and a little bit of Zechariah too. And we're going to try to keep noticing the differences. By the way, who comes first when you have the two Nevi'im, Ezekiel or Zechariah? Ezekiel is the prophet of doom. He is the counterpart of Yirmiyahu. He's living in Babylon at the time. So when he's prophesying, he is prophesying on Nar Kvar, he's in Babylon, and he's witnessing the destruction of Temple number 1 from the Babylonian side. So when he describes all the destruction, which is the first half of the Sefer, then he has to pick up the parts of the people and what they're thinking in Bavel. And then at the end, what happens is he has what's from Perek Lamed onwards, he has a whole series of prophecies of Nechemta, of the future consolation, and then finally leading to the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. Immediately preceding this perek is the chapter that we read on Pesach, which is about the dry bones. So you can imagine what's building up over here in Yechezkel. There's the valley of dry bones arising to life, and then immediately is this vision, this oracle. So we're told the following. I'm just going to read a little bit of the first paragraph in Perek Lameches in Yechezkel. God spoke to me, Yechezkel, saying, Ben Adam, that was the way God would address Yechezkel, son of man, Simponech el Gog Eretz Hamagog, Nesi Rosh Meshel V'tuval V'hinovei Alav. Turn your face and give a prophecy to Gog. Now it's interesting, it sounds almost like Bilam, meaning Bilam is talking to certain nations and he's telling them things. He's telling them things about each nation. So what is happening over here is Yechezkel is talking to Gog. Gog's not necessarily listening, but we're listening to the conversation. We're the third listener of this sequence. V'amarta, and this is what you should say. Komar Hashem Elokim, hineni elecha Gog nasi rosh meshech v'suval. I'm talking to you. I'm responding to you, Gog, who's the king of all of these nations. Meshech Tuval v'shovav ticha. So in a certain sense, we're talking about this incredible mass of army that Hashem is addressing of Gog, which is underneath him. We talk about horses, chariots, people wearing all types of armor are underneath him. Poras, Kush Ufut Itam, and now he has these other nations, so there's an allegiance. We're not just talking about one nation, he has a system of other nations with him. Kulam Magain Vakova, all of them wearing protective gear. Gomer Vachol Agapel, the area of Gomer and all its armies. Beis Torgamo Uvayakasait Sophon Ves Kol Agapov Amim Rabim Itoch. And we don't necessarily recognize all these names, but he's referring to all these nations which are forming an alliance with Gog. Vehikon, and what's the bottom line? Prepare yourselves. V'achen lecha ato v'kol kolecha hanikolim olecha v'yisal ohem lemishmar. You are going to be the head. You're going to be the God. You're going to be the leading light of all these nations. Miyomim rabim tibokei ba'acharis hashanim. In many days, at the end of the years. That's an important word over here for us. Ba'acharis hashanim, at the end of years. It's a very obscure reference, but it's saying that this is at the end of many years. Tavoyal Eretz Mosheves, you're going to Mosheves, Mecherev, Mekuvutzat, Mekubetzes, Me'amim Rabim, Avar Yisrael, Asher Yu L'Chorbot Tamid. You're going to now arrive at a nation which was settled peacefully, was in a certain sense removed from sword and destruction for many years. So the landscape they're arriving to is a peaceful one, right? Where Israel seems to be in complete peace with their neighbors. And it sounds like Israel has been extracted from other nations and is now dwelling peacefully. So this sounds like post something else. It sounds like post a diaspora experience. And you will arrive, or you will arise like darkness. This is the word Shoah, which is used as we use it today. Kashoa, the darkness, and there's a very negative connotation to this word. Tavo, you will come like that. Kionon lechasos ha'aretz tihiye atov kol agapecha v'amim rabim osach. And you will cover the land. So you can imagine this war host of these allegiances of all these nations, all their armies, now attacking what seems to be the quiet land of Israel. Now, interestingly enough, we don't see what happens in this battle. Okay, there's a silence over here. Now God enters. We're going to see what happens in this battle when we turn to Zechariah in a moment. And we now continue Lamed Chesiod. Komar Hashem Elokim. Voyoba Yamahu. On that day, Yalud Dvorim Alevavcha, V'choshavto Mechsheves Ra. On that day, you're going to think evil thoughts. V'marta Eilel Eretz Perazois Ovoi HaShoktim Yoshev Lovetach. You say to yourself, I'm going to come to this land that dwells with open cities, no walls. And they all dwelling safely. Kulam Yoshim Be'ein Choma. There's no walls. V'briach V'dolosayim Ein Lohim. They don't have any form of protection. Lishlol Sholal V'lovoz Vaz Loshiv Yodcha Al Chorvos Noshovos. You're going to come to take loot from these nations, from Israel. Vel Am Usaf Migoyim, from a nation gathered from other, from among the rest of the diaspora. Or se mikne v'kinyan yoshvei al tabur ha'aretz. And they're going to take advantage of these traders. Shiva udadan usachare tarshish v'kol kifireh yomer lucha hajli shlol shalol ataba halavoyz bo baz hikalta kolecha l'oseis kesev v'zohav l'kachas mikne v'kinyan lishlol shalol gadol. And all these other traders, this is the way the Metzuras David understands it, all these other traders in the world will come to you and they're like the vultures of prey. And they will see that you have an impending distraction to make. And they will say, we'll pay you for any money that you get out of this. So the traders are already waiting on the distraction of this battle. And this is all like sort of waiting for this distraction to ensue because everybody realizes it's about to happen. Lachain. Therefore, because this is about to happen, Hinoveh ben Adam, says God to Yechezkel, prophesy to them, V'amar to Lagog, Komar Hashem Elokim, Halo Bayamahu, B'sheves Ami Yisrael Avetach, Teda. When Israel's dwelling securely, you should know. And you're going to come with your war hosts with you. You're going to come with all your chariots, let's translate into modern terms, tanks, right, and half tracks, whatever you're going to be coming with. And you're going to come like this cloud to cover the land. It'll be at the end of days. I'm going to use you as a vehicle of sanctifying my name. So in a certain sense, God's saying, not only am I responding to you, I'm bringing you there to sanctify my name. So somehow, the actual war itself is to be sanctifying my name. Komar, by the way, what does it sound like? Just in terms of historical references. It sounds a little bit like Yetzias Mitzrayim in the sense that Gog over here is in a certain sense the vehicle of God. Right? At a certain point, Paro loses his free will and he's just an operative in terms of God producing a certain message in the world. It's almost like Hashem is saying to Gog, before you even start, I'm telling you now that all these thoughts that you have is going to be just part of the cog in the system of Kiddush Hashem that I'm trying to effect. Very interesting. Let's finish the battle. He says, Komar Hashem Elokim ha'ata hu asher dibarti bayamim ha'kadmonim biyad avodai neviyei Yisrael hanib'im bayamim ha'hem shanim lahavi oscha aleihem. I talked about you many years ago when I said I would bring you to my land. This is a very enigmatic pasuk, and all the Mepharshim deal with. Somehow, there seems to be a precursor of Gog and Magog, of the apocalypse. And all the Mepharshim search where in Tanakh it could be that there is a precursor that's already talked about, that God already talked about this destruction. On that day, says God, when you ascend, my anger will rise. al admas Yisrael. There'll be an incredible noise. The word rash, actually, in Tanakh is used to describe a very destructive occurrence, which none of the Forshim equate with an earthquake of sorts, which is mentioned throughout Tanakh. I'm going to bring some form of terrible natural disaster, it sounds like. And the fish in the sea will tremble, and the animals of the earth. Everybody will be shaken. And everything will be destroyed. The mountains will crumble. The stairs, the steps will fall apart, and every wall will fall to the land. I mean, you can imagine. This is on the scale of destruction. This is not a 3.4, right? Or whatever is occurring over here. We're talking about the greatest proportions possible. The Korasi halav lechol harai cherev numa Hashem elokim. I'll destroy all my mountains. Cherev ish ba'achiv tiyah, and there'll be such confusion. Everyone will be killing each other. And I will judge him. I'll judge him with disease, with blood, with a falling fire, with falling rain of these stones and burning tar. I will rain down on him this destructive rain. And I will be known. And of course, this is the beginning of the text of Kaddish, right? This is one of the originating places where Kaddish is because as the Beis Hamikdash is being destroyed in the days of Yechezkel, he's talking about the days where it will, in a certain sense, we're talking about the Achres Hayamim will be reestablished, and therefore, Hiskadalti Viskadashti. And then at that point in time, I will be sanctified and great, made great in the world. So Kaddish, in a certain sense, relates, as we say Kaddish, on a micro scale, relates to the bigger picture of Gog and Magog itself, of the actual bringing back of Hashem's name. So that's where Yechezkel puts it. The next chapter describes how they're all going to be brought to a valley, and they're going to be all their corpses are going to be placed there, and everybody's going to see them, and all the nations will pay homage to God, without going through the specific details. Listen to a little bit of that. That's the way Yechezkel describes it. The conversations being had between whom? In Yechezkel, is God in Yechezkel, and Gog, in a certain sense, is not really even present. We're witnessing that Yechezkel is talking about this nation, and we don't really know that he's party to this actual discussion. We don't know too much about the battle, but we know about the response of the battle, right? We know that the way that God's going to react to this and how it's going to be treated. In Zechariah, I think it's a little more terrifying, because he describes what the battle's going to what's going to happen in the battle before God steps in. Okay, so this is why when you read, this is the very end of Zechariah. By the way, Zechariah's prophecies are perhaps the most enigmatic in all of Tanakh. And this is the last parak of Zechariah. So it's very hard to get a sense of, you know, pinpointing what's going to be what. But you get a certain picture, you get a certain sense of tone over here. Listen to the way that Zechariah describes it. Hine, yom bo la'ashem v'chulak shalolech bekirbech. There's going to be a day which is coming, and that your loot is going to be divided in your very midst. When we say Hine Yom Bo, it sounds like when you hear those words, right? There's a pasuk which sounds similar to that, which is right. And that the Yom Hanora Hagadol Vanora Hine Yonochi Shaleach Lachem Ezra Eliyahu Hanavi at the end of Malachi, which is very close to Zechariah. There's the day Hayom Vanora, the day of fear and trembling in a certain sense. There's going to be a day, says Zechariah, that your actual possessions are going to be divided in your face. And he says the Vasafti as Ko Hagoyim El Yerushalayim La Milchama. Now we have a more specific venue. Did you notice that in Yechezkel, when it was describing it, it was El Arzi, it was to my land. Now we have a specific destination. It's going to be to where? To Jerusalem. There's going to be a war in Jerusalem. The city will be conquered from us. The house will be destroyed. There'll be pillaging, raping, a destruction of the city, and almost half the people will be left in. Only half the city will be left in the city. Now, so when people talk about in the Gemara, it says the Chav Le Moshech, you know, one of the Amoraim famously said, "Yes, let it come, but I don't want to be there." Meaning the descriptions that are brought over here in Zechariah and are going to continue are so terrifying. These are kind of things we hope we don't have to witness. He says that God will come out and he'll fight like the day of battle. V'amdu raglov b'yomahu al harazeh sim asher p'nei Yerushalayim mikedem. He will stand figuratively on Harazesim, right? That's where the entire burial, our oldest burial grounds are, on Harazesim. And God will figuratively stand there, but what will happen? V'nivkar Harazesim echetzio mizracha v'yoma, gei gedola ma'od u'mosh, chatzio har tzafon v'chetzio negba. The mountain will split down the middle. So God's power, so to speak, on that mountain will split it. Now, it's hard to know what this is going to be, and we're going to see in the Rambam, he says, we're not going to know these things until we see them. But when we talk about these descriptions, when you talk about the splitting of mountains and mountains crumbling and raining all kinds of ash, there are in today's warfare, we can appreciate these comments more than we've ever appreciated them before. When we saw what happened in World War II, when we were talking about nuclear warfare, we've heard these descriptions before as people a few centuries ago wouldn't have. So when you listen to this, you listen to the terrifying elements that are being described here. V'nastem gei horai, and everybody will be fleeing through the valleys of the mountains. Ki agia gei horim el atzal, and they'll come to this place called Atzal. V'nastem kasher nastem ibnei harash, v'mei uziah melech yudah, v'o Hashem elokai, kol kadoshim emoch. And you'll all run as you ran from the rash. Again, the mention of this rash. This rash, by the way, must have been some sort of, the Mepharshim deal with this, it's talked about the beginning of Amos, must have been something so life-changing that years and years later, everybody referred back to it in Tanakh. In Amos, they talk about, Amos is trying to get the people to wake up. So he says, remember the rash, remember the days when everything fell apart, and the houses fell down, and everybody was in turmoil, and people died. So this becomes, in a certain sense, like the example that people can relate to of what this experience is going to be. And what's going to happen? And that day, there's not going to be light or dark. There's going to be, in a certain sense, it's all going to be dusk. There's going to be this eternal dusk or cloud. There's going to be a day which is neither night nor day. But at the time of evening, there will be light. Again, what's going on is very hard to know, but you can imagine the cloud of dust hanging over a destroyed area. That's going on over here. And then suddenly, from the center of Jerusalem will spring forth this spring of water that will go in both directions, eastwards and westwards, and will go and will persevere through both seasons. It won't freeze, it won't dry up. It will continuously spring forth this life water. And on that day, you will know that God will be one. That's where we say this pasuk from, is Zechariah, on the day of apocalypse. And all the land will be flattened except for Jerusalem. So the picture that you're getting is that all of the land will be like a coastal plain, and you look up in every direction, you'll be able to see Jerusalem. This is now as Jerusalem rises. And there will never be problems again. It'll be secure from that time onwards. And he describes what's going to happen to the nations. This is what's going to happen to the people who fought against Jerusalem. Their eyes will melt into their sockets, and their tongues will. Right, I mean, we've heard these descriptions before, and their tongues drying to their palates. God's confusion will be among them. They're going to hold hands, and they will ascend. And he carries on talking. He carries on describing this retribution. But it's interesting that where is it at the end? If you drop down to Pasuk Tes Zayin, it says V'haya kol anosar mikol hagoyim aboyim al Yerushalayim. All the remaining nations, V'alumi de shana b'shana, they will have to come on the annual basis, Lishtachavos lemelech Hashem Tzvakos, to pay tribute to God of hosts. V'lachag es chag ha-sukkos. When will they come to pay tribute to Jerusalem? On Sukkos. Those who don't will not receive rain. Okay, so this becomes one of the reasons, you're going to see in a moment, why this Haftorah is, of course, on Sukkos, is because of the reference somehow to Sukkos that the tribute will come afterwards. So here we have two descriptions of what seems to be the same battle, and the Mefarshim seem to put it together. There's the two halves of this battle. We get a sense of more of what the battle is going to be like from Zechariah, the more the retribution from Yechezkel, in a sense. And together we have this notion of war of Gog and Magog. Interestingly enough, we don't have specifics mentioned in Zechariah in terms of who's going to be the oppressor, but the Mefarshim do make the linkage that it's going to be this host of unknown nations under the control of Gog. So now that we have a little bit of the text, now we have a little bit to discuss. Otherwise, we're shooting from the hip. Yes.
Well, they mention about that even Yehuda will fight. Does that mean there'll be a civil war?
Not clear. Again, it's not so partial. The Mefarshim deals. What is this other war that's talked about at the end of Zechariah? That seems to be. Is it referring back to the same war, or is it another war itself? Not clear. There's gonna be a lot of things where we're gonna say that lo yedu eshiyu achiyu. That is the way the Rambam describes it. Is a lot of these details. We're not going to know exactly how they play themselves out until we actually see them, just because this is the end of time. Yes?
Any commentaries suggest that the Zechariah is not referring to Gog and Magog because the text never refers to it anywhere as Gog and Magog?
So I have not found, I have not looked extensively, but Rashi for sure connects it, and it seems to be, we'll see in just a moment, that seems to be the main mahalach of people connecting it. Where there's room to disagree is, we'll see in a moment, just in terms of the timing. The timing of these events is under dispute, and that might be as a function of which text you're reading, and therefore might actually distinguish. So that's part of it. But I've not come across particularly Mefarshim say that. So the question is, first of all, is why Sukkos for all of this? Why is it that we have to have These haftorahs? It seems that we're really focusing because we read both of these. These are two haftorahs on Sukkos. The Gemara tells us the following in Maseches Megillah. Megillah is delineating every reading, every Torah reading that we have. Most of it is pretty clear. And the Gemara says the following in source 1. Yom Tov Rishon Shel Chag, day 1 of Rosh Hashanah of Sukkos, Korin B'Parshas Moedos Sheba Torahs Kohanim. We read the section of Shor HaKesev O'Eis, which is what we read yesterday, the first 2 days. Umaftirin, and we continue in the Haftorah of Zechariah Yudalit. Hine Yom Bo LaHashem. That's what we do, right? That's War Gog Magog version 2, in a sense, in Zechariah. Va'ina de'ika trei yomi lemachar mikra hachi nami karinan v'ifturi ma'am afturinan. On the second day of Sukkos in the diaspora, what do we have the Haftorah of? He says ve'ikalu el haMelech Shlomo. You have the Haftorah of Shlomo and Sukkos. Okay. Skipping to the end of the Gemara, if you turn to the top of the next page, the Gemara finishes off by saying, Omer Rav Huna, top line, Omer Rav Shabbos Shechol Yos Bechol Shel Moed, Bein Pesach Bein Besukos, Mikra Karinon Re'ei Atah. We have the same Kriyas HaTorah, which is Re'ei Atah in Shmois, and Afturi BeFesach, which is HaTzomos Yaveshos, on Pesach, the HaTorah Chol Moed is Yecheskel Lamed Zion, which is the dry bones. And with Sukkos, Beyom Bo Gog, is the day of Gog becoming. Why is this? Rashi explains. Rashi, these are two separate Rashis, but Rashi says in the first Haftorah of the first day, Hinei Yom Bo Hashem, Dichsiv Bei Lachuges Chag HaSukkos. In Zechariah, we talk about how the final tribute of all the nations will be when? Universally on Sukkos. Therefore, that's why I read the first Haftorah. And why the second one? Beyom Bo Gog, says Rashi, V'hi HaMilchama HaAmura B'Zechariah, Behinei Bo Yom Bo HaShem. Rashi says it's clear to Rashi that the two are the same episode in terms of Zechariah and Yechezkel. Therefore, we put the two together because it seems to be that it is going to be concluded on Sukkos. The tribute is going to be concluded on Sukkos. However, the Rabbeinu Yaakov, the Tur, takes it one step further. Not only does he say that the tribute is going to be on Sukkos, he says the following. He says, V'hachi Omar in source 3, V'hachi Omar Rav Hai, Shemati mi picha chomim ki tchia sameisim asidol yos b'nissan. V'nitzchas Gog u'Magog b'tishrei, mishumachi b'nissan maftirin ha'atzomas yiveishos v'tishrei b'yom ha'boi Gog. He says, actually, he thinks that the occurrences are going to be germane to the time. which means that Tchiyas HaMeisim, or one of the levels of the revival of the dead, will be in Nisan, around Pesach time, and the actual final battle of Hashem against the nations detracting will be when? On Sukkot, which is why not only is it about when they pay tribute, but apparently it'll be the time itself that the attack occurs. Okay, again, the beginning, the end, we're not sure, but it sounds like it's around this time of year where the attack will actually occur. And it is interesting, of course, that as we say in the Harachaman, we talk about the Beis HaMikdash as being Harachaman Yakim Nanu Es Sukkas David Hanofeles, right? We talk about the Beis HaMikdash itself almost like the sukkah itself, which is from a pasuk in Amos, which says, "Bayamahu akimes sukkas David anofeles." I'm going to pick up the fallen house or home of God, and it's interesting that at the time of Sukkot, where we talk about the sukkah, is almost like the Beis HaMikdash's revival. We're hoping is going to be able to be achieved at this time itself. That's in terms of why now, why specifically this time of year, but now. Now for the more complex question is, when is this going to occur? The only time that we've been given in the Haftarah so far is, what's the time frame? Achris Hashanim or Achris Hayamim. Now at the end of days, the end of years. That's a very vague expression. So we're in the relationship to other events. So for instance, there are other events which are going to occur at the end of time. They are Mashiach, right? But Gog and Magog doesn't talk about Mashiach, right? Gog and Magog talks about a battle. So when is this in relation to Bishop to Mashiach, to Tchiyas HaMeisim, Eliyahu HaNavi, right? Which part of Mashiach? It's not very clear from the Haftarah when this is going to be. Maybe purposefully so. And this is something that the Mefarshim struggle with, as to when this is going to occur. And we're going to see in a few minutes' time, some people are actually going to pinpoint it, retroactively or in the future. Okay, so firstly, the Rambam, in a theoretical context, the Rambam has two suggestions. Suggestion number one is the following. In Source 6, Omru Chachamim, Ein Bein Ha'olam Hazeh Limos Mashiach Elo Shibud Malchuyos Bilvad. There's no difference between the world we exist in now and the days of Mashiach, except for Shibud Malchuyos. What does that mean? Meaning we're going to be living in a reality where we're not going to be oppressed. We're not going to be the scapegoat of history. We're going to be able to live freely. There'll be a high recognition of God. But what the Rambam is saying is that there's not going to be, you know, flying cows, meaning there's not going to be any natural change over in the world, right? Because it should be noted that this is the opinion of Shmuel Nagmar, it's the Machlokes, whether when Mashiach arrives, whether will actually the nature of science even change. When Yechezkel talks about the Gar Ze'ev in Keves, that there's going to be this, you know, this end of vision, end of times vision of the wolf and the lamb and everybody living together. Some of them, unfortunately, take that very literally, meaning that that's going to mean that there's going to be a change in the way things operate. The Rambam says very clearly, first of all, and this is the Shittas HaRambam, everything's going to be pretty natural, just so we're not going to be oppressed. Okay, this is what the Rambam is emphasizing, number one. Then he says the following. Yireh, he says, Mipshuton shel divrei ha-Nevi'im. By the way, when the Rambam says Yireh, that means to say, it's his opinion. Okay, so whenever the Rambam says Yireh Eli, it's the Rambam's opinion. Now, it's a very educated opinion. It's the best opinion we can probably get on the matter. But in the end of the day, he's not saying that I'm telling you this is concrete fact, because he's saying, you're right, it seems to me from the Pesukim, this is what's happening. At the beginning of the Messianic Age, we'll have this incredible battle. There'll be some form of prophet who will arrive beforehand to try to straighten up their hearts. Shenemar, Hinei Anochi Shaleach Lachem Es Eliyahu Hanavi, Lifnei Yom Bo Hashem HaGadol V'Hanora. That Eliyahu is going to come when? Before the day Yom HaGadol V'Hanora. So therefore, what's he assuming? Yom HaGadol V'Hanora is referring to the retribution day of Gog and Magog, which hurts everybody, by the way, not just them. So before that is there going to be some form of leadership from a Navi. V'Ein Oboi, this Eliyahu is not going to come to give us decisions halachically in Tum and Tara, so not to tell us who is not got the right lineage, or to give the right lineage to those who have been rejected. He's going to try to bring peace to the world. So Eliyahu is going to come, he's going to try to bring peace, That might be what Yechezkel is referring to in those the valleys of peace that Gog and Magog is attacking. That some form of peace is going to be achieved, and then, as things just seem to be fine, that's when Gog and Magog will descend upon everybody. Now, he says, "V'yesh mina chachamim she'omrim shekodem bi'as haMashiach yavo Eliyahu." Some people say that it's actually going to be before Mashiach that Eliyahu will come. V'kol elu advarim gokayetz bohem lo yeda adam eich shiyu ad shiyu. Says the Rambam, general rule is that we don't really know what's going to be until we actually get there. Shedvarim stumim heim etzel hanaviim. When you read the Neviim, these matters are very, very very general. They're very closed. It's very hard to read them. He says an interesting thing. There's not even a rabbinic tradition as to how they will be. Everybody's working off what the psukim seem to indicate. That's why there's many arguments. Says the Rambam. This is very much the Rambam talking. The Rambam says this is not what we base our religion on. Meaning we're not going to derive much of either way we live our lives based on what will be in the end of days. He says, this person shouldn't spend an excessive amount of time on this. A person shouldn't spend too much time on this. They shouldn't be the foundation or the main part of your learning. They don't bring towards love of God, to fear of God. And you shouldn't start trying to work out when it's going to come, says the Rambam. So the Rambam is going to tell us the general traditions that he has, but he says don't spend too much time on this. And of course, it's interesting. It happens to be this is one of the areas which breeds the most amount of curiosity. Everybody wants to know what's going on and what will be. And many people talk about it, in fact. But the Rambam says, just remember, and memo note is this shouldn't be the focus of everything we're doing. Now, no, by the way, we're... So the Rambam says that there are different traditions as to when he will come. Will it be before or after Mashiach? But Bir Zemeh, the Rambam says, it's not very clear how it will be. Interestingly enough, if you actually trace this backwards and you go back to the Midrashim, like the Midrash Tanchum and the Yalkut Shimoni, there are different indications equally in the rabbinic traditions as well. That's what the Rambam is referring to, as to whether Gog and Magog will be the Mashiach coming, or it'll be after Mashiach, that there'll be a period of peace, which seems to be described in Yechezkel, and there afterwards, the war of Gog and Magog will arrive after that. There's an interesting Chasam Sofer as describing, he has a very interesting, we're not going to go through it inside over here, but he describes how it's possible for the Rambam to have two opinions on this, when the Pasuk says, Livnei Yom Bo Hashem HaGod HaVanara, in this is the Tshuvas Chasam Sofer over here, which is in the next source. But be it as a may. There's another element of this which is quite fascinating, and this is a very useful indicator as to what's going to be going on. This is something which we may have heard about in different fragments. The pasuk earlier on in Zechariah, in Perek Yud Beis, says the following: there's going to be a day when I'm going to want to destroy the nations coming on Jerusalem, which sounds very much like Zechariah Perek Yud Dalet, right? There's going to be a day I want to destroy those nations. V'shafachti al beis David v'al yoshev Yerushalayim ruach. I'm going to spread this wind. Chayin v'tachanunim v'yibitu elai eis asher dokru v'sopdu alav k'mispeid al ha'yachid v'omer alav k'omer al ha'bechor. And there's going to be this tremendous... There's going to be a certain sense of grace. And everybody is going to be mourning and eulogizing somebody or something. And it's very not clear... There's going to be a great misped, a great eulogy in Jerusalem. There was this particular king who had this incredibly huge eulogy. And it's going to be like this. And everybody's going to have their own individual eulogies about somebody. And Zechariah doesn't tell us who. This is Zechariah is one of the most complex sets of prophecies to understand. And so the Gemara suggests two alternatives. This is actually the Gemara in Sukkah, which is near the end. The Gemara says, What is this hesped? It says, what is it about? Pligi bari bidois of Rabbanon. There's a machlokes Amoraim. Chad Omar al Mashiach ben Yosef sheneherag. V'chad Omar al Yetzer Hara sheneherag. One says it's going backwards over here. Once it is about at the end of days when the Yetzer Hara will be destroyed. This is when the Gemara says that Ariel will look back on it and the Tzaddikim will cry and the Rishayim will cry. The Tzaddikim will look back and they'll say they're crying because they saw what they surmounted was a mountain, and the Rishayim will look back and they saw what they weren't able to surmount was like a thin hair. Right? This is the end of days, and they talk about why is it separate seating at this Hesped? This is why it's relevant to Sukkah. Right, this is the whole. Isn't that the day that Yetzer Hara is being killed? So why do you need it to be separate? Right, this is a very fascinating sugya and sukkah altogether. What interests us for the moment is the one opinion is when will there be this whole destruction and battle? When on the day of the killing or the destruction of Mashiach ben Yosef? Apparently, there's two Mashiachs. There's Mashiach ben David and Mashiach ben Yosef. Mashiach ben Yosef is going to be the precursor. The Maharsha says, he says, "Debegula Hasida." This is jumping down to source 10. Starting in the words already, to be gula hasida bimher of yomenu. That's the base. The in the future redemption, b'tchila yavo Mashiach ben Yosef l'shil Yisrael. At the beginning, the Mashiach ben Yosef is going to be there to save the Jews. K'moshe gazu veis Yosef lehav veis esav l'kash. As we know that Yosef was the salvation for Yaakov when he returned to Esav. Shein zaru shel Esav kola el al yidei Mashiach ben Yosef. It'll be through the Messiah of Joseph. Aval ayde order kochavim v'rabim shiavo shuv liRishalayim yehareg lo yeh shum geula shlema ad bo Mashiach ben David. Somehow he's going to be killed in battle. So what seems to be happening over here is that the war of Gog and Magog is going to be now cycling around the destruction or the killing of the Mashiach ben Yosef. He's going to start the process, but he's going to die within the process. Interestingly enough. And if people have tried throughout history to identify who this Mashiach ben Yosef was, in fact, or who he will be, most notably, interestingly enough, Rav Kook, in 1904, gave a hesped in Jerusalem. He moved just earlier that year to Yafo from Europe, and became the chief rabbi of Yafo, and it was that year that Theodor Herzl died. And so here you have this young rabbi, this young chief rabbi. He wasn't so young, but certainly in terms of the constituents of Jerusalem and the Yishuv Hayashan in Israel. And he came and he made a statement by making what was called the Hesped HaGadol. The Hesped Yerushalayim was what it's called. The Hesped in Jerusalem. And in that speech, he goes through the strands of Yehuda and Yosef in history, and he identifies Theodor Herzl as being a Mashiach ben Yosef. Very powerful. He was given an incredible amount of criticism from the one section of the community of others. But he felt, and based on, you're going to see in the next source, this is the introduction to Kol HaTor. Kol HaTor is attributed to the Vilna Gaon, but there are arguments as to the validity of its authorship. But it is attributed to the Vilna Gaon, and it says the following. Shitasa Yesod Yeshua Rabbeinu Agra. This is what the Agra said. Od Yosef Chai Klomar, Shemashiach Ben Yosef Chai V'Yichye, V'Tispatel HaGzeira, Shenigzara alav lehareg, that he'll overcome that gezerah to be killed. Biarinian. What does this mean? He says, "Inem milchemes Gog u'Magog, he'll milchemes ha'umos habois levatel kibbutz kol Yisrael v'yishuv Eretz Yisrael." Milchemes Gog u'Magog may not be the battle as described in Tanakh, but it might be the battle to stop Israel settling in the land of Israel. It's the movement against the movement to settle in the land of Israel. Shehein pu'ulosav shel Mashiach ben Yosef, because settling in Israel is the actions of whom? The Mashiach ben Yosef. That's what Mashiach ben Yosef is facilitating. Mashiach ben Yosef nitzan lekoach min hashemayim lekabetz kol Yisrael yashav es Eretz Yisrael ba'aschalta degula. The Mashiach ben Yosef is going to have that power to bring the nation of Israel back to the land of Israel. He's going to have this incredible strength to be able to do this. Now you can start imagining the first person who was actually able to politically arrange this. V'kol ze b'derech hateva, and all of this is natural. Meaning it's not going to be he's going to raise his staff and hit the ground and Europe will split in half and everybody will walk through. What's going to happen is he's going to have to have a meeting, and there's going to have to be a council, and there's going to have to be a vote. There's going to have to be all kinds of things going on. And at the beginning there's going to be a success of those opposing this movement. They're going to try to stop Mashiach ben Yosef reaching his end. And that's what it means he's going to die. It doesn't mean to say that he's going to die, so to speak. It means to say that the movement that he's trying to orchestrate is going to be stopped in his tracks. V'ilu haya oile biyadam ne'arog es Mashiach ben Yosef, dahayinu levatel es asher kvar na'aseh mipu'ulos haschal tzedigula b'derech hatov. If they're going to say, well, stop that. Harei shaya cheshkas agolus chozeres chas v'sholom la'achshich enem shel Yisrael kevitchila. Lefi lifnei psichas tekufas haschalta. And if they are able to stop it, it'll seem like the golus will restart again. It'll seem like the darkness will descend once again. And if that process is stopped, the darkness will descend again and will only be awakened again by the miraculous Mashiach of Ben David, which will split open that darkness. So this is what the Vilna Gaon says over here. Based on a lot of these teachings over here, there's a notion that the Vilna Gaon is describing is that the Aschal Tzedigula, the process of people coming back to Israel, is the Mashiach ben Yosef. Is that process going to be stopped or not, in the natural way or not? And that's the discussion that's had over here. Therefore, the war of Gog and Magog in this context, therefore, is more of an ideological, political battle, in a sense. Perhaps militarily as well, but the point is it's to stop that movement. And we've seen many, many series of that. Let's take this one step further. In terms of identifying who Gog or Magog is, Rashi tells us very simply that Gog is the name of a king, Magog is his nation. This is, by the way, this is against those people. You'll see these marches where people will march and they will have these figures of Gog or Magog, right? They'll have two figures, these two kings with all their war gear, right? There's no Magog. Magog is not a person. Magog is the nation. Okay, just to clarify that point, according to most of the Mefarshim. So there's Gog and Magog. Who are these people? So the Abarbanel says something interesting. Yecheskel tells us about these nations. Right, he tells us about Tuval and all these things, but again, it's not very clear who these nations are. We hear about these nations in Bereishis, when it talks about, you know, Magog is one of the children of Yefes, as the Radak points out. But who that is exactly, we don't have a necessarily identification. Throughout history, there have been a lot of attempts at identifying it. In fact, Abarbanel, living in the 1500s, has a very fascinating way of looking at it. His Ladati, Loi Shiaru Amit Soi Hamaforshim Klal, Vuma Shibiarno Bemayon Hayeshuais, Besef, sorry, Bemayon Hayud Aleph, Misef Bemayon Hayeshua, Shea Sisi. So he says that Shea Sisi Bepirush Sefer Daniel. Abarbanel, not only did he write on all the Torah and all of Nach, but he had Sfarim written and dedicated just to Geula. The Rabbanon was incredible. So, and remember, he's writing at the time during the Spanish Inquisition and expulsion. Right? So that's when he's writing. So he thinks that Magog and Magog is going to be when the West, and Christianity is going to conquer the land of Israel from whom? From the Muslims. Then he says, and therefore Islam and the East is going to respond, and they're going to fight back. And the war of Gog and Magog, the way that Abarbanel describes it, is the convergence of East and West, where? In Israel, where the powers of Christianity and the powers of Islam converge. Now obviously the Abarbanel has the perspective of history to have witnessed, historically not himself, but the Crusades. Right, so that's what he is imagining over here is going to be the war of Gog and Magog, where East and West are the power struggle exists in Israel. It's interesting today, just politically speaking, the war of East and West is in the Middle East. That's where the power struggle is occurring, and is becoming unfortunately more and more intensified in that particular area, where East and West join together in this. The Malbim takes a very similar note. Interestingly enough, Ronald Reagan, when he was the governor of California, made the following comment on Ezekiel. He says the following in Source 16. He says, Ezekiel tells us that Gog, the nation that will lead all the other powers of darkness against Israel, will come out of the north. Biblical scholars have been saying for generations that Gog must be Russia. But it doesn't seem to make sense before the Russian Revolution, when Russia was a Christian country. Now it does, that Russia has become communistic and atheistic. Now that Russia has set itself against God, now it fits the description of Gog perfectly. Interestingly enough, as obviously this is a political statement more than a statement of Mefarsh, they're trying to explain Tanakh. But this was, in a certain sense, what he's saying is that now that Russia is part of that Eastern bloc of atheism, he feels that it falls part of the war of Gog and Magog, and you have to think about that in terms of rearming the Middle East and where that power comes from. Fascinatingly, Rav Menachem Kasher, who wrote this beautiful Sefer, describes that he thinks that perhaps Milchemes Yom HaKippurim was perhaps an element of Milchemes Gog and Magog, because you have Israel dwelling securely in its cities, not expecting anything, and then the war coming from all sides. And he goes through the Pesukim and shows you how many of the things that occurred in the war, or the Battle of Yom Kippur in 1973, relate to the war of Gog and Magog. There are people who criticize him because it's supposed to be followed by a process of tshuva, which wasn't necessarily. It was a very depressing time afterwards, after the Yom Kippur War. But there are people throughout history who have identified this. I think, if I'm not mistaken, some people identified World War I and World War II at the two parts of Gog and Magog. I know Rav Moshe Eisman, in his explanation on Yechezkel from Art Scroll, so identifies it perhaps with the Holocaust. The problem is that it seems to be that the venue of the battle is Israel and Jerusalem. So it's not so clear how this is, and which is why you see throughout history different people identifying different places, because it's not so clear. I'd like to just leave with the following thought, and that is the thoughts of Rosh Shimshon Rafael Hirsch. And this perhaps brings it all together. And that is that whatever and whoever Gog and Magog is, he makes the very fascinating notice or point that the word Gog comes obviously from the word Gag, which is a roof. Which is why it's so interesting that it's on Sukkos, which is a time where we specifically remove our permanent roofs, that we have the battle of Gog and Magog. And therefore he says that Gog and Magog is the ideological the ideological nation in the world that not only walls itself out from its surroundings, but walls itself out, making itself impregnable from above as well. Just at the time that the nation of Israel walks out to show our dependence on God is the time that this nation Gog, the nation of the roof, in a certain sense, impervious to God's intervention, will come and fight. And that'll be the time when all the buildings will fall down, in a certain sense, at the end of days. So in terms of ideologically and theoretically what this could mean, again, this leaves the scale open. But at least this is the beginning of a bit of a survey of perhaps some of the elements of this very interesting and terrifying time. I hope that we have more time to study this in depth in the future.